Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about patience. So let's start off, as we often do, with the question of what do we need? What type of patience do we need within our context, within the context of an alternative dispute resolution, of a negotiation, of a mediation, of even a workshop and a seminar? Yes, what types of patience do we need? Oh, I see we have lots of people. Thank you all for being here. Yes, we've got consensus, kind of. The people are saying we need the patience of Job. Remember the biblical figure who was renowned for his patience? Other people are saying extreme patience and lots of. Yes, we need lots of patience. But what actual type do we need? I think that quite a few people are talking about what I'm going to call empathy patience. Right? Yeah. You need to have some empathy, and you need to have the patience to get it, right? And to think about it and to use empathy. And remember that empathy, of course, and we have talked about this on prior shows, archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Do remember that empathy is not agreement necessarily. It is understanding. Yeah, you don't have to agree with someone to have empathy. You just have to understand why they have those opinions. Have to understand, it's kind of a little expression, understand where they're coming from. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have lots of people that are contributing. Thank you all for being here. I'm going to call the one after empathy kind of patience for different personality traits, right? Different kinds of people, different kinds of personalities. As leader, we probably have strong personalities. That's a good thing because it makes us capable of leading, right? So let's have patience for different types of folk. Yes, a lot of folk are talking about the civility rules and having the patience to really enforce them. Yes, remember our civility rules for those of you who are new here. Welcome. And for those of you who are old, you've heard this before, that the civility rules are really the only rules the Recipe for Peace Now has, because we say we're practical people and we look at the situation. But the civility rules at their core mean that we will not be rude to one another. Yes. And you do have to have the patience to constantly enforce them. Sometimes I think I'm like a kindergarten teacher, right? Yeah. Where all the children get kind of see if they can get away with something or they forget the rules and like that. So you have to have the patience to enforce the civility rules, to really make them work. Yes. Yes, patience to keep reminding people about the civility rules. And I'm going to call it the last one. I think we're going to talk about patience with the process, right? Patience with the process. Yes, you need to remember always that although you've done it lots because you're very experienced, this may be the first time, in fact it often is, that your participants have seen this, have seen a mediation, have seen a negotiation. At least it's the first time if they've seen it with you. And even a workshop and a seminar, right? Yeah. And so you need to have patience to people through the process itself. Now let's take these one by one, like we always do, and let's talk about them in a practical manner, because although we like theory just as well as anyone else, we're a very practical show, and we like to know what to do about stuff and not just discuss it. Yeah, what should we do? How should we handle this? What would be a good way of making this work, right? Yeah. The first one that we're going to talk about is empathy, right? Well, okay, patience of Job. We all know that we need extreme patience is the answer to what type of patience do we need. And oftentimes, come to think of it, you do need to, as leader, you do need to remember to be patient. At least I do. And remember that these things take a little while. And remember that sometimes people actually don't understand what it is they're supposed to do or understand exactly what's going on. And you have to have the patience to explain that, to tell people what it is that is happening, right? Yeah. You need patience to be able to really think about something, to be able to know what it is that we are trying to do, and that it'll take a little while and we're dealing with people, right? Yeah. And people sometimes need explanation. Sometimes they get impatient, right? And you have to say, well, you know, we are progressing. We're working towards it. Yeah, because it's human nature to feel impatient. Jesus, this is taking forever. That kind of a thing. Yeah. Oh, wow. These people are really slow. Yeah. We are the leader. We have patience. We're a good example of patience, too. Just like we're a good example of the civility rules. Mm-hmm. So empathy. Mm-hmm. I remember that empathy is, of course, not agreement. Mm-hmm. And thank you all. Everybody, quite a few people are breaking out the 5W questions in order to gain empathy. Yes, it's the most practical thing you'll ever learn from me. The 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, why? Who, what, where, when, why? Now, you don't break them all out one after another at the same time. You use whichever one you need to get down to how come this participant is having this reaction. Mm-hmm. Empathy, not necessarily agreement. But let's reason this out. And you know, when you employ the 5W questions, and you've all seen this, sometimes the person doesn't know. Yeah, they just had a knee-jerk reaction to something, and they actually don't know. The who, what, where, when, and why. And they have to really think about that, and sometimes the answer is, because I'm stupid. And that's an answer too, though. That's something that you have to think about, that you have to know, that you have to say, wait, what does that mean? Who, what, where, when, and why? These are important questions because we want the answers to them. Who, what, where, when, and why? Mm-hmm. Now, yes, people are asking if you do it kind of in the group. I'm going to say what you guys say I say all the time. I'm going to say it depends, because it does. It depends on the circumstances. It's possible that you might ask these questions in front of the whole group. My guess is that, okay, my style is to be non-confrontational. I think it's a good thing because it's a good example to my participants. Therefore, if I've got someone who is insisting on something that is less than what I had in mind and is making us have kind of an impasse, right? This is why we have the food in the room, and we'll talk about that at the end of this show. But we have food in the room, we have the potluck, so that we can have breaks when we need to, kind of time outs, and have something to do together. And it'll diffuse any kind of argumentative state, right? Yeah. And it gives you a chance as a leader to kind of take the person aside and ask some of the 5W questions. Yeah. And kind of reason it through. I do it the first time, at least, in this more private way. Person doesn't really know the answer. Or the answer, yeah, this is a good point. People are saying the answer is because I'm a bigot, right? Because I'm obnoxious. Because I'm a bully. Yeah, that is the why. But you have to work it around so that they don't want to do that no more, as they say, right? And if you ask these questions in front of everybody, they will go defensive, right? And not really answer the question. They'll just go defensive. This way you can reason through the answer and make them see that it's a bad thing to be a bully or a bigot and that they need to back down a step, listen, think, and oftentimes have a revolutionary thought that never entered their little brains before. Yeah. The let's all be reasonable. These people in this particular situation, at this particular point in time, we're going to deal with each other. Ha. Who, what, where, when, and why. So, yes, this is true, too. Sometimes you have someone who has had kind of a cultural reaction, right? And it's, they didn't think about it, really. They had a kind of a visceral reaction in some way. And if you really talk to them, the answer is because my background says that that's how you react in this situation. But it didn't come from them individually, right? Yeah. Yeah. Forrest and others are talking about this being the difference between preconceptions based on personal experience or learned reaction. Yeah, that's it. The difference between preconceptions based on personal experience or learned reaction. Now, if you've got personal experience, you have to find out which personal experience we're dealing with. Actual personal experience with that particular person. Maybe not on these particular issues, but sometimes you get people who have, had a personal relationship outside of business. And maybe aren't in it anymore, or maybe might be in it still. But this is interesting to know. You need to know how come this reaction is happening, right? Yeah. And that's very different than my culture taught me to react in this way. Because it's handled differently. A personal experience with this type of issue, but not these particular participants, also you need to know it. Because that's handled differently, too. Personal experience with somebody in the room, you're going to have to get them together and talk it out and see if somebody or both of them need to be in a different group separately. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or they can put their differences aside or their liaison aside. We're not going to have cliques either. Remember, that's a bad thing, too. When you've got a clique is when a few participants are getting together, whispering, making deals, so to speak, amongst themselves as a private subgroup and not including everyone. Remember, we're all inclusive. I have actually acted like a kindergarten teacher again, and I have actually separated people, as in made them sit on opposite sides of the room. And since we have a no pulling out your cell phone rule, they didn't have the opportunity to do the new passing of notes, which is texting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pardon me. Yeah, I'm using your computer in other ways. Yeah, different kinds of communication across the room. So we've got three kinds of people who we need to have empathy with, and they need to have empathy with the group. Empathy goes both ways, right? Yeah. Personal experience, really, with someone there. Personal experience, similar issues. Taught reaction. The taught reaction is the most straightforward, I think. Because you can understand, if the leader helps you have empathy, that those rules, whatever they are, because you can't change people completely. It's not our job. You just want to get through the negotiation to a successful outcome. That these people in this room at this time for these issues are outside of whatever kind of bias that is. Right? Yeah, doesn't apply. Go have your bias somewhere else, your bigotry. Mm-hmm. And people do understand that and react to it. It makes it... Yeah, people ask me how you actually do that. That's how you actually do that. You take the person aside at the breaks. You find out that it's not an experience reaction. It's a learned reaction. It's a preconceived notion. And that this person did not create. It was given to them as a fabulous gift. yeah, you know I'm being sarcastic, of course, yes. And you confront them, you say you understand that, you don't know if it applies elsewhere, but it doesn't apply here. People's eyes bugger out for a second there, and it makes them comfortable. They think, oh, wow, is that true? Hmm. Okay, I guess so. Right? Yeah. It makes them feel comfortable that it's okay to understand that this is a good thing and it is something that we can accommodate in our heads. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, we're going to have empathy, which is understanding. Yes, and then if you've got the people in the room, you have to get them together, talk it out. If it is an experience with a similar situation, it is not the same situation. And you point that out. It's not the same people. It's never the same. It may be similar. And you'd be surprised. Sometimes people are using a situation as a guide that, honest to God, is not at all similar. It's really like 7 miles away. It's just not the same. And it's just, wow, really? They did a negotiation when they got divorced, a mediation of some sort. Well, gee willikers. And it was an unpleasant situation because they were getting divorced. But we're not doing family law now, right? And that's not at all the same kind of a thing. And they go, oh, well, yeah, I guess not. See, you have to tell people this. They just don't know. Occur to them, it's just amazing. It is. Just amazing. It's like, really? No, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you have to, Sharon and others are saying you have to have the patience to challenge preconceived notions, which is what these really are. They are preconceived notions. Came in with them. Had them for a long time. Came in with this idea that this is how it's going to go for this negotiation. Right? Yeah. Preconceived notion. I don't think so. And also, yeah, patient. This, Hussein has a really good idea, and I do it. I just didn't think about it as a question of building empathy, but of course it is, and a question of patience, because you have to let everybody have their turn, and some people kind of go off topic. They kind of ramble, and then some. You have to keep control of this, because sometimes people want to ask questions as you go around. See. And so you have a certain time limit for doing this. But Hussein says that you should ask everyone in the group round robin, so no one is singled out for the 5W questions. If you've got one of the W questions going, Hussein says ask everyone in the group round robin. You know, round robin, I guess it's kind of an Americanism, but it means that you go from one to the other kind of in the order in which they're sitting. Sometimes we actually even are sitting in a circle or at a table or something, and you go, everyone knows when their turn is next because it's going to the left, so to the right. Usually, for some reason, it goes to the right. I guess most of us are right-handed. And everybody gets their turn in sequence, basically to how they are sitting, right? Right. And so that's round robin. It's kind of a little expression. Ask everyone in the group round robin so that no one is singled out. I like it. So that no one feels that their who, what, where, when, or why, whichever it is that we're doing, is the one that's bad, is the one that people are perceiving as stupid, right? Yeah. If you go round robin, then nobody gets singled out. I like to, if we have the time, and I usually make the time, I like to, especially if we meet at a certain time, like once a month, perhaps, or even more frequently, I like to have a question that we go round robin on to kind of get everybody thinking about the group and about the issues and about how much they like being here, because people like to talk about themselves, right? Yeah. And that's why if you look at the workbook, you'll see there's some games that you can play. Some just have nothing to do with the issues, just a human, how's it going type question that everybody gets to answer. Sometimes I say, sometimes it's as simple as, tell us something interesting that you've done since we've met, right? If we don't meet so often. Yeah, tell us something interesting. Tell us what you've done. Yeah, and people love that. And it's interesting, and then people feel community with the group. And that's a really big thing, because it makes us work as a team better. And that's the reason for the food, too. It's to build community. It's to build a comfortable, convivial atmosphere so that we can really relate to the other people in the group, right? Yeah. And sometimes people have done something interesting that everybody's interested in. Yeah. And I don't know, they have some sort of information that you'd like to know. Nothing really to do with the issues necessarily. It's just a way to get together so that if there's some sort of bump in the road, which there always is, we can get over it. We understand that we're a team. We're together. We're working together on this. Yeah. And yeah, I do that. I like to do it. Introduce yourselves. People say introduce yourselves and say something interesting about yourself. Yes. Introduce yourself, maybe if we don't meet very often, or the group composition changes, right? I must confess that I am an aficionado of name tags. I really do like them because I see a lot of people, right? And if I don't see you on a regular basis, I'm not exactly positive which one you are. So introduce yourself might be a great idea. A while, if we don't have new people in the group, it seems kind of odd, but maybe not, depending on how often we meet, right? And whether or not we're wearing name tags. Would name tag solve the introduce yourself each time thing? Yes. people are talking about the fact that well, you might. People are asking if you give the question ahead of time so people are prepared. Maybe. Yeah, why not? I think that a lot of people don't like being surprised by a question. You don't want anybody to feel put off by the fact that there's kind of a icebreaker type question, right? And yeah, you might say that there's going to be one. Mm-hmm. I've learned that people do like that. It depends on your group. It depends kind of if you're going to have time limit too, because it allows people to get their thoughts together in advance, right? Yeah, and which is kind of a good thing. Not everybody can speak off the cuff. Mm-hmm. Good point. First person to answer the question, you could ask for a volunteer and start the group that way, and then go round robin from that volunteer. So everybody has a chance to get their thoughts together. Some people are faster at it than others. Some people are just more verbal than others. They just like talking better. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I am afraid that I think I'm the most verbal person in the group. So when we have a question, I am the first one to answer it, so that everybody gets their thoughts together and gets an idea of what kind of an answer they're going to give. I'm kind of a good example of it. So when I do the round robin question that Hussein and others are recommending, and I do it almost with every group, depending on the group and how much time we have, I actually start the question and the answer, and then it goes for me round robin, because everybody wants to know what I'm doing too. I'm a participant, yeah, as leader. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have to have a lot of patience for this, don't you? The patience to gain empathy, and the patience to guide your participants to having empathy. Right? Right. Now let's go to the next one, or else we're going to run out of time. Let's go to the next one. I'm going to call it a personality trait, patience. Sometimes you have to be more patient than with some people than with others, huh? Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you. Caroline and others are saying that the leader must remember their own strong personality. Yes, the leader must remember their own strong personality. It is really true. You must remember that you have probably the strongest personality in the group. That's why you're the leader, right? Yeah, you've got a really strong personality. And sometimes the participants in the room have very different personalities than yours, and they need to be embraced in, right? I do have a very strong, very outgoing personality, and sometimes it's frightening and put-offing to people who are very, very quiet. Mm-hmm. Very introverted, right? They're kind of scared to speak up because things are happening, right? But you want to hear from them, and sometimes they've got a really good idea. Sometimes they've really got something to contribute. Sometimes they're an expert in something that you need an expert in. But you need to invite them in. You need to call on them. Mm-hmm. You need to say, look, this is, what do you think? Yeah, just say, what do you think? What's your opinion on this? And then you can see if they're having deep thoughts, or sometimes they're quiet because they really don't have an opinion, right? That's fine. Not everybody has to participate every minute of every discussion, right? Yeah, but you want to be certain that they are not being left out, that they are not being ignored, right? Yeah, that's the trick to it. You want to be certain that they're not being ignored, that they are comfortable, that they are being treated properly, right? Yeah, not being ignored. Yeah, this is a good point. Leah's saying that cultural perceptions shape personality. A lot of people are going for religious ones, right? Your cultural perceptions shape your personality. Whether or not you're supposed to be seen but not heard, right? Whether or not you give deference according to social standing, age, gender, right? These are all cultural perceptions that shape your personality and how you react to other people. I do a lot of international work, pardon me, and I see groups from different cultures. And sometimes, my basic idea for leading a group is relatively democratic. Everybody has input, everybody's opinion counts, and we kind of lead by reaching consensus amongst us. It's a very American way of doing things, and I'm an American. But sometimes I deal with groups from other countries who need a revised leadership style. And I know it, and I understand it, and I have empathy for it. Some cultures want the leader to do more leading than others. They don't want to have the democratic process and make consensus and like that. They want the leader to help them to understand where it is they're supposed to go and to help them get there. They need more leading, so to speak. Right? Yeah. And that you have to know, too, because those are personality traits dealing with culture. And a lot of times culture and religion are kind of intertwined. Right? Yeah. Good point. I suppose this is true. Quite a few people are talking about it. Yuri and others are saying that the understanding of what is right versus wrong is often different because some feel that the ends justify the means. The ends justify the means. Pardon me. That is a statement that always frightens me. Hang on a second, we'll take a sip of water. Pardon me. Yeah, we're back. The ends justify the means. Which is a kind of a morality question of what's right and what's wrong. When I hear ends justify the means, oh, I see that that's the theory. I have, in my day, resigned as leader. I've run off. If that's really going to be the rule, because my cultural instinct is not that. And it has been my personal experience, not necessarily with these particular participants, but with similar experiences where they have that mindset, I'm going to call it, what Yuri calls right versus wrong, but it's kind of a mindset. If they've got that mindset, I think in my heart that they're going to do something illegal because they think it's okay. Yeah. That they're going to do something illegal that I'm not going to want to be a part of. I don't want to do it. I don't want to be a part of it. I don't want to really be associated with that. And I will leave. I will not lead this group. Yeah, it's a good question. People are asking what happens if you don't realize it at the outset and it kind of reaches that point. As leader, you try to steer it away from that point, is a right versus wrong theory, and that we will not cross the line, right? If they're crossing the line anyway, if you know what I mean, it's kind of like, yeah, well, that's a theory. Whoops. If this is something that is happening and you have told them that you disapprove, that it's a bad thing, I leave. Maybe this is chicken, right? I leave before it gets to any kind of a planning stage. I won't participate in it. I just won't. And oftentimes the thought of the leader leaving is sufficient to get people to come to their senses, right? Yeah. That's the idea, at least, right? To come to your senses and not do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a real case of morality. I will not. I actually will disapprove and not lead a group that wants to do something that's not even technically illegal, primarily because nobody thought of it yet, right? But is, in my opinion, unethical. Mm-hmm. And I know that that does infuse my cultural and religious beliefs, my core beliefs, onto something else. But I will have no patience for it. I really won't. And you need to have patience as a leader. You need to have patience to get people of various personality traits to work together. Not such an easy task. That's why we're good at it, right? Right. If everybody could do it, they wouldn't need us. Mm-hmm. Mohammed is making a good point that if you're going to have patience with personality traits, that you have to be careful that you're not profiling. Yeah. Which is a preconception kind of unconsciously, right? You have to watch for it. Profiling is an idea about a certain type of person, right? And an idea of what their personality traits will be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, good point, Mohammed. You don't need to profile. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a good point about patience, too, patience personal traits. Several people are talking about speech patterns. You know, isn't that funny? Sometimes you do have to be patient with someone in the group, or maybe more than one, who has unusual speech patterns. Yeah. And Suki and others are talking about the use of acronyms and kind of trade words. Yes, or maybe, well, let's do the speech patterns first. I've had people in groups, and you probably have too, that either have a very heavy accent or a very regional dialect, for example, which makes speech patterns that are kind of, you have to have some patience with it. And honest to God, I had this just the other day. I had a really intelligent woman, kind of excited, enthusiastic excited, not bad excited, not civility rule excited. And she went to explain something to the group, something really pertinent, something that was important that needed to be taken into account, taken into the negotiation, taken into to understand before we could make a decision. And so she actually made a presentation. She got real excited, and she talked very fast and in a very heavy Asian-accented dialect. And, as Suki and others are saying, she also used acronyms and trade words. And honest to God, when she finished, there was a hush in the room. And we all, I believe I did this too, we all kind of stared at her. because we knew that it was important. And she said, understand? And I said, no. I'm sorry. Because I knew if I didn't, honest to God, you know how sometimes on television, at least in the States, this is true, and this is an international show, global show, so I'm not certain if this is true other places, but sometimes they want some sort of a man on the street, some sort of a good example consumer, to say something nice about their product, but you really, they're kind of not really clear, and they put the words on the bottom of the screen. Yeah, they do it with senior citizens and diaper commercials, I swear, because they say something nice about the product, but they're kind of quavery, and you're not exactly, they're not sure you understand it. Honest to God, we needed words underneath. I don't understand a word she said. Between the accent, the fastness, and the use of acronyms and trade words, it was gone. I mean, so what happened was, and you can't just nod your head, she's got something important to say, we want to know it. She was a real expert. And ordinarily, we understood what she said because she made an effort to speak slowly and look in our eyes because she knew that she had heavily accented English. So ordinarily, we were all fine, like on personal one-on-one. And I smiled at her, and I was very gracious and used her name and apologized that we just missed it. And I asked her to please tell us again, and could she act like we were all two-year-olds and speak slowly? And when she needed to use initials, an acronym, to not, and to use the whole words. And then if we could please stop her and ask her what it means. And it was important. And it took her half an hour to actually explain it to us, but we really needed to know. It was an important expert opinion, and it had real ramifications to where we were going next, right? Yeah. And she wasn't mad. She actually laughed because she knew that that's what had happened, right? And we didn't do it in an insulting way, and she wasn't embarrassed. Nobody said we couldn't understand a word you said because, you know, no, you have to do it really nice. And I asked a whole bunch of questions. When she went to use an acronym, I said, what does it mean? And then when she told us what the acronym meant, I said, what does that mean? Because it was technical. And so she explained it. And we got down to the bottom of it, and everybody went, oh, wow, yeah. You see, we all wanted to know, and we all leaned forward, and we all thought about it and let it sink in, right? Yeah, and nobody was insulted, and everybody was interested and pleased that we'd gotten to the bottom of it. So, yes, this is all kind of patience for personality traits and for kind of physical traits in that sense, right? Yeah. It's like I once had someone with a stutter. And the more excited he got, the more kind of harder it got. Kind of patience. It's not a crime. We want to know what you're saying. Let's have some patience as a group. First of all, it's good practice for us as a team to have some patience for each other so that we can know what it is that's going on and what we need to know. Yeah. Oops, we're going to run out of time. Yeah. The next one up is the civility rules, right? Yes. The civility rules, you've got to have patience to enforce them, to do it consistently and fairly, right? Yes. And Elizabeth and others are talking about the leader being a good example. Always. We are always a good example, right? If we become uncivil, if we raise our voice, How can we expect other people to be civil just because we say so? Mm-mm. Well, you must be a good example of all of this, a good example of patience. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a good point that Adrian is making. Yet sometimes you forget this, but you have to have patience for it. He said that you cannot assume that everyone inherently understands the civility rules. It's true. Some groups you have to come right out and say them and really point them out, right? Yeah. You know, people are talking about bullying and what to do about it. And, well, the probably most straightforward thing to do about it is dismissal, right? If you keep doing that, we're going to throw you out of the group. And you can come right out and say that to someone. I usually do it the first two times in private, and then they're gone. I'm kind of strict about it. Sometimes, however, you can't throw them out. And that's the reason that they feel that they can bully or be uncivil in some manner. Because they know that you can't throw them out. They're integral to the group. Usually this is a group that you haven't chosen, by the way. In that case, they've probably got superiors, right? Bring them in. Explain the situation, right? Yeah. Let's have a little bit of pressure applied, since they think that it's fun to breach the civility rules and challenge them. I don't think so. There's also peer pressure, right? Right. You know, peer pressure gets a bad rap because usually we think about it in a negative manner. But peer pressure can be positive, too. It can keep you in the civil zone and prevent you from being uncivil and bullying people, because people think it's a bad idea and nobody wants to see it or hear it, or and they take the side of the bullied, right? That's a sure way to do that. Yeah, peer pressure. In fact, sometimes you need to actually encourage people to have peer pressure, right? Yeah, encourage them to say it's not okay. Mm-hmm. Because some people get scared, they get reticent, they don't know if other people think it sucks just like they do. Right? Yeah. Mm-mm, we won't have it. Yeah. So you apply practical pressure to get them to stop. And I have dismissed people from the group. And once dismissed, it's hard to get back in. Right? Yeah. People are talking about suspension, not dismissal. If that'll work. I don't know. I don't usually do it. But it depends on your group. It depends on... I would say that would depend on whether or not the group is desirable to be in. Therefore, you don't really want to be thrown out. You were just testing the limits. And you would like the person who is doing the infraction to be a part of the group in the future. So you don't actually dismiss them. You'd give them a suspension. I can really see it in a group that I don't generally deal with. And that's the truth. I deal with adults, and I deal with corporate, I deal with business, or I deal with organizations that are transacting some sort of business. For example, they need to make a change in the law or something like that. They are, but they've come to do business, so to speak. I can see suspension, especially on a first violation, kind of a no incivility zone type rule, which you all have to announce and make very clear. We're going to get to transparency in the process in about a minute, because we're going to run out of time. I don't know that we're going to make the recipes, and I apologize. But I can see suspension quickly and immediately, either first or second infraction, you know, right away, in like a youth group. something where you want the people to participate, but you can't have them, and they would like to remain because it's good, but you can't have them be uncivil. You'll give them a chance to think about it, right? I don't deal with youth groups, but I can see that that would be a spot for it, right? Yeah. Yeah, okay, I'll go with that. People are talking about things like hospital boards and things where you've got citizen members. People, you know, who represent people with a certain illness or something like that. And they want to be on the board. They've just gotten excited. And you can't have it. It's their personality, for example, to be bombastic. And they get suspended, and then they come back. And you have to make it so that suspension's not a vacation from work. Do you understand what I mean? It's not a ploy. I want to be suspended because I don't want to go to the next meeting. But there's, you know, that kind of a thing because it's easy to get suspended. No. You have to make a rule so that, for example, first time suspension, second time expulsion type thing, right? Yeah. Maybe that's too strict. You'll have to decide, given your group, you have to decide. But you have to have some patience for that, too, because it means that somebody has to be integrated back into the group after they've been gone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's go for patience with the process because we have like 5 minutes. But we've had such a fabulous discussion. We will indeed probably not get to the recipes, but we will get to them next time. Yes. We've had such a lovely discussion that I don't want to end it. Patience with the process. Mm-hmm. Terry and others are saying you need to remember that it's new to the participants, and that's really true. You as leader have to have the patience to lead your participants through the process, which means they have to understand it. They have to understand what it is that's happening, what it is that needs to be done, and where they're going. Yeah. You have to have patience with, okay, you know how you announce that there's no dumb questions? There's dumb questions, let's face it. And you have to have patience with that if they're sincere and not just a way to keep us from going forward. You have to have patience with people who have questions that really, honest to God. But you have to have patience with that. It's important. It's important to know that you are able to ask questions, and that no one's going to ridicule you. No one's going to say that's a really stupid question, because it's really not a stupid question. It's not. You have to have patience, and you also have to have transparency. Transparency is really, this is what we're going to do and why we're going to do it, right? Yeah. Misha and others are talking about giving explanations and answering questions in many ways. I like it. Give explanations and answer questions in many ways. Yeah, Misha and others are right that sometimes you've answered the question already, but it's asked, which means that you didn't answer the question. You have to have some patience for this. You think you've answered the question, but if you just repeat the same words that you said last time, 3 times, it doesn't, obviously it's not answering the question. Do it a different way. Explain it differently. Explain it more clearly. Break it down. Ask why they're asking the question. What don't you, who, what, where, when, and why? What don't you understand? But not in a hostile manner. Not what on earth don't you understand, you idiot? No, not that kind of a manner. Tell me what you don't understand and let me explain it. That kind of a manner. Where you really, really work it around so that someone understands, right? Yeah. It, Misha says, give explanations and answer questions in many ways, right? Yeah, because if you keep giving the same answer and getting the same question, then the answer is not leading to understanding. And that's what you want. Yeah, yeah. Conrad and others are talking about the process and that you need to have the patience to really stay in contact, to be certain that participants understand what they need to do. To be certain that participants understand what they need to do. Yeah, you have to keep track. If you don't have the patience or the time to keep track, and I don't have the time, you need to have someone who will. Someone who is capable of sending out the notices, sending around the information, keeping track of how the teams are doing, right? Someone to report into, someone to send out and keep everyone in the loop. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you need to be in constant contact because people need, A, to remember that they're still working on it, right? Because it's taken a while. And, B, you want to know that everybody's getting there. That whatever it is that needs to be done is being done, and that we haven't kind of fallen off the map there, right? Yeah. Jeffrey says you need to be open to questions and requests for help. That's the ticket. Sometimes someone said yes, sure, and they meant it. Really, they did. But when it comes down to it, they need some help. They're not quite making it. It's bigger or more complicated or different than they thought when they said sure and raised their hand, right? And they need to be able to ask for help. But more importantly, they need to be able to get it. If you need to get an expert in, if you need to have information gathering, yeah? They need to be able to ask for help. Yeah. No sin in that. Ask for help. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Open to questions and requests for help. Mm-hmm. You know, Thomas and others are really getting down to it. The main thing about having patience is that it makes the participants comfortable with the process and with each other. Yeah, comfortable with the process and with each other. We've gone forward. We are working on it. We have an atmosphere of trust that we're going to get there. We're going to get to our successful outcome. And it will be one of value and not just something kind of slapped together because we got bored and we wanted to get it done already. No, we're going to work it through and have something of value, a successful outcome that really works, because otherwise, my friends, it is not a successful outcome. It's just window dressing. It's just a statement of some sort. Looks like you did something, but you really didn't. Yeah, didn't make it. Didn't have a practical outcome. Hmm? My friends, we are out of time. We will get to the recipes next time. We had such a fabulous discussion. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for all of your ideas. Yes, if you want to find us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Our website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Mm-hmm. Prior shows, they're archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.